look, we're back. Yeah. It's a regular episode.
Regular wow. ass, vanilla ass, wabah. Mm. We're here.
Speaking of vanilla, I got me a vanilla iced coffee right here. Oh, boy.
Damn. I know the one.
Extra cream.
Yeah, I know the one that you're talking about.
Well, look, we're rusty. We've not had a regular episode in, what, 3 episodes?
Yeah, I was doing that thing as I was sitting down this morning thinking, like, man, we do this every time and we say this every single time, but it is amazing how you can do something for 5 years, over 5 years now, and you get off of the rhythm for, like, 2 weeks and you're like, what? What, dude?
How does this work?
Yeah, so yeah, weird. Yeah. I don't get it.
Even in making notes, I was like, what do I usually structure these as? But I want to say right off the effing bat,
wow.
I teased this, I think like 1 or 2 weeks ago. Yeah. I forget. Because yeah. I was like, I had an experience with this thing.
Yeah, I've been waiting on this shit.
And I did. And I can finally talk about it.
I need to hear about it. Because it was
what are we talking about today?
You pitched it real cool last time we did talk about it. You were just like, well, I'm gonna save it because like I had like an experience, and I've been like this whole time wondering like, but what is it? Because I don't even know what your topic is, so I can't even guess what the experience was.
Yeah,
because it's all a mystery to me.
Lower your expectations.
That's exactly what you said last time.
Yeah. It's like the moments following, like the day after this happened, it was like, whoa! But it basically boils down to I tried reishi mushroom for the first time. Reishi?
I think it's reishi. Yeah.
Oh. Then I'll say reishi.
Unless I'm fucking wrong. I might be. But I don't know. Listen, I think I've heard reishi. I usually just see it
written. I'm going to go into it with that being my goal, but because it's been reishi in my head for so long, I will probably accidentally listen. We're going to have to all get over it together. Mm. But I went to the Labyrinth in Dallas semi-recently.
It's purple,
and
right?
That is it's a purple building. It's like a house in like a residential area. And it's touted as the Dallas's oldest witch shop. Mm. And it is really cool. It's got this little step. You know how like those older houses, I feel like, you know, 30s, 40s houses, you kind of have to step up to get into them. They all have like they're built on a
love that
foundation, I guess. Yeah. Their little concrete step that they have, it has a like a metal pentagram like in the
tight
step, like put in the step.
Sweet.
And the two people who work that were who working that day were the sweetest people in the whole world. And there was this, I don't know if they take this title for themselves, but there was this witch sitting in like the herb room.
Awesome.
And she was like putting together the herbs, and you know, and I kind of slunk back there and I was looking at all the jars and bags of all the herbs, and I came across, they had like a little shelf that was like today's special or, you know, this week's focus or whatever. And it was reishi, Christina Ricci mushrooms.
Awesome.
And I was like, you know what? Let me look into this. And I will be very forthright here. The only reason I've ever heard of these mushrooms, really, I'm sure I've seen it in passing, but the only reason it snagged my attention is because there's a video game. By the name of The Long Dark. Listen, if you're into survival games, it's fucking play The Long Dark. Anyway, The Long Dark, you have to use these mushrooms for your health. So I was like, ooh, I wonder if there's any real life tie to that.
Yeah,
so
that's how I know check them out. As they are super big in health circles.
Yes. Yeah. And I'm sitting there checking it out, and they are basically big long strips of dried mushroom, which is apparently secondary, like how you find them. The most common way that you get this mushroom is like in a powdered form.
Yeah, capsules are pretty common.
Pretty common. Or in a mix, like, you know, those hot cocoa mixes that are also like very mushroom heavy.
Yeah, I have some. It's cacao, which I always get those confused, the difference between like cocoa and cacao. But I do. I have some like a ceremonial style cacao that's got like reishi and a few other mushrooms all up in there, and you can't taste it. It just tastes like cacao, but it's neat. You know, I like
cacao.
I like to drink it,
Archer.
And I'm just like, of Archer.
Yeah, because like in one of the very early, like maybe the first season, they have this running thing where they're just like cacao.
Yeah, that's a Pamism, isn't it?
Yeah.
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 Yeah. It is.
And if, as we have established, I am Pam Poovy.
You are Pam Poovy, and that's an honor.
So this witch, this wonderful and like knowledgeable crone, this is the crone I want to be.
Oh, hell
was
yeah.
Like, hey, you're checking this out. Let me tell you about it.
Nice.
So just bombarded. And not in a bad way. Not like I'm sitting there like quit talking, but like I'm just sitting there with my eyes, my pupils are as big as dinner plates, and I'm just soaking this information up. And she's like, okay, take about this much of it. It was about like half a pinky, you know, of the mushroom. She's like, put this in, you know, your tea, and you can dry it out and use it a couple of times in a row, giving me all the insider information. And I got it mostly for the sleep benefits, because I'm not a sleep girl. You know, I'm not one of these sleep girlies.
Yeah, you don't. You're not good at it.
It's not a skill that I have. unless I'm too good at it. There's no middle ground.
Yeah.
But I took it. I made a tea once I got back home, and I slurped this tea. And there was some other stuff in the tea. It was like I think I did like some peppermint and maybe a little bit of chamomile. I didn't want to add too many sleepy ingredients because I was scared.
But sure. You're just never going to wake up.
Yeah, I put together a nice calming tea and through this Reishi and Reishi.
I gotta admit,
Christina Reishi.
I'm a little nervous. I'm a little nervy about reusing the mushroom, a wet mushroom.
I dry mine out.
Yeah,
but you know, do it your own.
Yeah,
your mileage may vary.
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry,
don't drink mold.
I've just been thinking about that. I'm just like. I just needed to get it out, and now I feel better.
I will say that just because I'm like, because I'm very the way that I am, I intend to dry it, like, you know, dry it out, and then it'll be sitting there dry, and I'll be looking at it, and I'll be like, I don't know if flies landed on you, so yeah. I haven't really.
Is that a spore?
I intend to. I do dry it out, and I'm like, I could probably use you. But I also have a whole lot over here, so I'm just going to use a fresh one. Mm. Anyway, I sat down, drank this tea, put a little cream in it.
Mm.
And when I tell you that I fell asleep at 7:30.
Fuck yeah, bro.
I was just on the couch, and I was watching Alone.
That's the nap show.
And I... conked. I conked hard and deep. I went into the deepest, most radical sleep that I think I have ever had in my life. I'm talking a sleep of, it was beyond dreamless sleep.
That's a slumber.
It was like, it was a slumber. And when I did have dreams, like as I was, I guess, starting to come out of it, they were the most realistic, like almost did the Matrix glitch today type dreams.
Mm-hmm.
So peaceful, not really about anything, but just, you know, you had a good dream type dreams. And I ever since then, I've been having some at night, and it's been putting my ass to sleep, and it has been a great time. So yeah, so then I was like struggling, like, it was the week we did the silly sode, I think. And I was like, fuck, what am I going to do? And because it was like the day before, and then you wrote and you were like, hey, do you want to do a silly sode tomorrow? I'm wiped. And I was like, oh, God, yes. But it was basically right after that I was like, I should just do this mushroom that I've been abusing for the past week.
I don't think you're abusing it. I think you're probably taking it as you were directed, and it's fine.
Yes. Yeah, it's probably okay.
Abusing. Well, cool.
But thank you for listening to my very long story that basically surmised to Charlie drink some tea and had a good sleep.
Hey, it's important. Sleep's important, bro. I'm all about routine, sleep, going to bed at a decent hour, and getting your full rest, man. It's so important.
And that's what this has helped with, is like, I will know what time I should go to bed. Like, mm-hmm. as a figure in my head, I will logically, I'm like, you know, about 10.
Yeah.
I should start winding down. But then 10 comes and I'm like, I'm not feeling it. So I've started making this tea around 10 and letting it do its thing. And it not only has it kept me sort of on a schedule, I skip it sometimes and I can tell when I skip it too. It's crazy. But the moments that I am asleep are just nothingness. Time ceases.
That's and great.
I don't know if that's how it's supposed to be when you sleep, because normally when I sleep, I can almost track the entire time.
Yeah.
Because I'm just in this half awake.
It's very shallow.
It's super shallow. I wake up at the drop of a hat. And I get up 100 times to get a drink or to pee or to, like, I'm hot, I'm cold, I'm this, I'm that. Yeah. Like, it's just not a pleasant experience sleeping. But this has put me into a fugue state at between the hours of 10 and, like, 10 and 10 are pretty much fucked for me.
Great. I think that's great. I am glad.
What are you talking about?
Listen, I'm actually talking about something. Usually when I talk about anything, it can be tied back to witchcraft specifically.
Sure.
I can't do that this week. This is actually just a topic that doesn't have really much to do specifically with witchcraft, but it's just something that I think is cool. And it's something I've always found interesting. And I think, here's the thing, we're not necessarily talking about something that's like, as a witch, you're going to use this. And long throughout history, it's been associated with witches, but they are inherently witchy. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yeah. No, I get it.
I'm talking today about weather vanes.
I can see that.
You know what I mean? Yeah, it's just like, I've always loved them. I saw my first weather vane as a very, very young child.
Did it have a chicken on it?
No, but I get into the chicken today.
Yeah.
And talk about what all that's about. But no, this was, it was atop my old elementary school on a really, really old building. And so from like 5 years old, that was the first weather vane I ever saw. And from a kid's age, I was fascinated with it. I mean, I was a, you know, spooky kid. I liked the gothic look of this big cast iron weather vane on top of this old creepy fucking building. Yeah. And so I was trying to decide what to talk about this week. And again, this was another situation in which I was lying in bed and almost asleep. And it was like, weather vanes, like way out of the folds. And I was like,
talk about the weather vanes.
Yeah. I was like, you know what? Yeah, cool. Let's do that. And I expected, before I did research, to be able to really kind of weave it in to be like, and so in your practice, you can utilize what I can't. I didn't really do that this week. But we talk about a lot of cool history, some famous weather vanes, some of which some of you guys will recognize and maybe see every single day to this day, as well as.
Are you going to talk about the one in Twister? That's a famous weather vane.
It's not the one in Twister. No, but
that's the one.
That's a good. That's a notable weather vane.
It's a weather. Yep.
There it is.
It's famous to me.
So anyway, we're going to talk weather vanes today, go back through history all the way to way back to Greece to modern day, talking about the weather vane.
The Greeks fucked it, didn't they?
Not to my knowledge.
Oh, I thought you were going to say not too far off.
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel personally like the Romans would be more likely to fuck it than the Greeks.
Yeah, they had
those 10 tanabulums with the giant cocks on there already. And listen, you can't tell me nobody did it.
Absolutely.
I mean, come on. You know,
I'd be doing it in the street.
Yeah, I mean, they probably were. Talk about fucking, what is it, Saturnalia? Telling me people weren't fucking 10 tanabulums right and left on those streets. Come on.
Wow. Okay, so I have some options for you as far as who goes first.
Who goes first?
We can flip to who goes first? We can reflip to restart the thing, or we can go back in time and just see the last regular episode and who would go from there. What do you want to do?
I don't care. We can do that second way.
Okay. So in that case, I'm going to go first. I'm going to talk to you about mushrooms first.
Real quick, can I have 5 minutes of your time to tell you something that happened to me that I've been meaning to tell you for a little while and I haven't? And if I don't tell it to you, I never will.
Yes.
I've got to just get this. Did I tell you about the mouse incident?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. So the other day.
You might have teased it. You might have given me a teaser because it's something about a. Nope. You know what? I've been watching too much Alone, and they eat
lots
of
mouse problems.
That's what I was thinking.
A mouse will ruin your fucking life in Alone,
dude. Ooh,
yeah.
Who's the guy that absolutely he goes like almost Larry? I think
he goes insane. He's basically Leopold in House of Usher over this mouse.
So okay, tell me about your mouse issue.
So the other day, normal day,
yes,
casual day.
In the dead of night.
In the dead of night. I was running errands. I think I had a class to teach that morning at the studio, and I had left class and was heading over to the Walmart to snag some groceries, right? So I was just driving around, okay? And it was a warmer day, so I had my barefoot sandals on, which was basically a thin sole with a few little strappies holding them on. Minimal footwear, okay? And so I get to Walmart. I go into Walmart. It's no big deal. It's no big deal at all. Okay?
I just feel there's only one reason for you to mention your footwear in a story about a mouse.
I don't know nothing. I don't know nothing. Mm. And so anyway, I am back. I go to Walmart. It's no big deal. Get back in my car. And I wasn't in there for very long. It was maybe, 20, 30 minutes. And it's a beautiful day outside. I'm having a really good day. It's nice. And it's balmy, and I'm just chilling and about, I don't know, I've been on the road for a little while and I was been maybe a couple miles and I start feeling this weird tickle on my foot.
There it is.
And, I was driving and, so you hit that like state of driving to where you kind of become the road and little external stimuli isn't something that you notice as much, And I was like, it's probably just like a draft from, because I sometimes keep my AC kind of circulating air on the feet area, And I was like, it's fine. It's probably just something like that. And I was kind of half paying attention to it, but it happened again. And then it happened again, notably, right? I really was like, what is this feeling? This strange, abnormal, kind of cold feeling that keeps touching me. And so driving along, I flick my eyes down and I kind of look between. So, cars are all, so with mine, in order to kind of see down, I have to look through the space of my steering wheel,
Yeah,
so I kind of look
I get it.
Down to the space of my steering wheel and spread out in terror is a mouse. And I can see it.
Just throw their little limbs.
Yeah, I can see it so clearly. It sees me and it's got all of its limbs flat and it's flattened out on the floor and its tail was like draped by my foot. That's what I've been feeling. This mouse tail on my foot. And so I don't know how, but I didn't react. Like I did. I internally reacted a lot.
But your body said, we're driving.
My body said, we're driving. And so I flicked down. So, and then my eyes immediately went back up to the road and I was like, okay, all right, then. So I set my cruise and picked my feet up kind of crisscrossed,
Great.
And got to the closest parking lot I could find, which was a small church. And
a little church mouse.
It was a little church and I got out and I threw all of my doors open. And there were a few people walking out just watching me do this, And I threw all of the doors in my car open. And what was so weird is my car was empty. I mean, it's not like I had like a bunch of food wrappers or anything in there. It was empty. Like there were leather journals in there. That was it. That was all that was in there. And
well, you live in an area where it's not uncommon for
tarantulas.
Exactly. And mice to get in your car.
And where it was, it had come right by my feet. It came in through the engine compartment, which isn't perfectly sealed all the time anyway. I never could find the mouse. Mouse was nowhere to be found, which made everything significantly worse in every capacity.
Yeah. Because I had, don't know where it is, then it's everywhere.
It's everywhere. And I had to drive home, obviously. And at this point, I was about 8 minutes of a drive from my house. And
did you just feel it tickling you everywhere?
Oh, dude. And I remember standing, I was frozen and I was holding my car door open, standing outside of it, thinking. And I thought like this for about 5 minutes. I know people were just watching this frozen woman thinking, holding her car door open, just staring at the ground in a daze. But I was thinking, I was like, what do I do here? Like, do I call? Do I like call?
Who do you call?
Roger, and be like, come get me? Like, what do I can't do that. I was like, I know that I can't do this, you know? And so I was like, no, of course I've got to go home. I've got to handle this. But all I could think the whole time was, I wish I had my fucking boots on. Like, that's all I wanted.
Yeah.
But anyway, get back in the car. I shut the doors, start the car up, hit the road. Again, it is set on cruise. So I basically had my legs lifted and ankles crossed and folded for the whole way home. But all I could think about the whole drive home, and here's the thing, I wasn't necessarily afraid of the mouse. I was afraid of the surprise again, because I felt lucky that I reacted okay the first one. But I was like, if this thing, if I look down and it's like crawling up my leg, I don't know what I'm going to do about that situation. And so the whole drive home, I was just breathing, you know, maintaining my breath work and driving home, and got out. And part of it, so by the time I got home, you know, you start kind of trying to talk yourself out of things. And I was like, maybe I didn't see it, you know, maybe it was something else. And when I looked down, the shadow of the light, you know, made me think it was a mouse, and I freaked out and thought that maybe that's why I never could find it. You know, and so I was just kind of trying to calm myself down. And then I get home and I get out of my car, and on the little floor mat is just the tiniest little poop you've ever seen. Tiniest little mouse poop. And I looked at it and I was like, holy shit, it was real. And so for the rest of the day, I just threw my car doors open and hoped it came out, and I never have seen it again. But I just needed to tell you that happened.
I'm so glad. I hope that when he got scared and threw his little limbs out, that's when the poop came out.
It's possible. I mean, it really is. Because it was just like one. And it was so specifically because I've lived, like, one of my rent houses in college had like a mouse plague. It was horrible. So that's part of my shock when I see mice, is like the trauma of seeing a mouse in my space. Oh, and it's like, oh, God. But it was just, and I know it was just one little tiny little mouse poop. And I was like, holy, there it was. It was real. Ugh. It happened.
I hate it.
Yeah.
And I hate it again, like you said, because of the surprise. I've had rats. I've had pet rats before. So it's not like, I'm spooked by the mouse. It's the shock of seeing it there.
Where it's also not supposed to be.
You don't know this mouse. What's this mouse got going on?
Well, that was what I was worried about. I was like, please don't bite my toes. Like, again, if I would have had shoes on, this whole scenario would have been from like an 8.5, 9 to like a 4. It wouldn't have been nearly as big of a deal.
I would have immediately started. Once I couldn't find it, I'd be like, it's inside of my boots.
The boots in my house?
On my feet.
Well, I wasn't wearing them. I was barefoot shoeing, remember?
I know, but I'm saying if you...
It just becomes a plaguing nuisance that stalks me and hides where I don't want it to be.
No. If you would have had your boots on, that's my thought, is like, oh, it would have crawled inside the boots. So it's like, to me, the barefootedness is almost better.
What kind of boots are you wearing that could hide a whole mouse inside of them?
That was a very the bear moment.
I don't understand these boot logistics.
Oh my God.
Anyway, go ahead.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Before that, we have business to attend to.
Sure.
I hope the mouse got out. You don't smell like death when you open your car.
No, it definitely got out. I think immediately when it saw me, it ran back into the engine compartment.
It was probably more scared of you, honestly.
It did the flatten. It did the scared flatten. Yeah. Yeah. It was completely belly sucked to the ground. And then I flipped my eyes up. And then by the time I looked down again, it was gone. So I think
I hate that.
It was almost subliminal, which was a scary enough torture of its own.
Listen, this already 30-minute long episode dedicated to our Patreon. Patreon, you're keeping our lights on.
Thank goodness.
Okay. Tiffany. This is Tiffany M.W.
Ooh.
Tiffany
Five M.W. syllables. Okay.
Tiffany M.W. Tiffany. Well, depends on how you say W.
Okay, I've got one. I don't know how, but I've got one.
Okay. Go for it. That was fast.
Yeah. Wise men say Tiffany M.W., but I can't help falling in love with you.
With Tiffany M.W.
M.W.
It'll be like that thing where you shove too many lyrics in at once. Like, remember what you did to my name. Oh,
there's so many instances of too many words, but I, God damn it, I love it.
That song, as I told you yesterday at our Cracker Barrel meeting, I woke up with that song running through my head.
Oh, Marnie, it's been a near so constant loop. Sorry, or is it, can sorry, you forgive yes. me for this plight? I don't remember what he says.
I don't know.
I love
also,
it.
Also, my favorite, just unhinged, fucking Robbie Rotten, is in that song. And, my life has been a constant loop.
You said recently. Robbie Rotten?
I knew you I was going to do
Rotty
that.
Rotty Largo?
Yeah, Rotty Largo. I said in the simp cap that I was going to do that. I don't think I ever did it within the simp cap, but in my brain, sometimes he's Rotty Rotten.
Oh my God.
You know, from that children's show.
Yeah.
I have been waking up with either some form of, I can't even remember the name of the show, fucking Repo running through my head, or something from El Dorado.
Great.
Or clogs.
I want to be free of clogs. I would love to be free of clogs. I'm still not. Every fucking waking second of my life is clogs. Yeah. I didn't ask for this, but here we are. I'm in it, and I'm so deep in it.
I feel like I've thrust this upon you.
Yeah, you did. But also, it's all right, because this is like something of internet culture that I'm just really deeply impressed with. So I'm fine with it.
Yeah. Before I even thought. Okay, God, listen here. I'm going to talk to you about mushrooms now.
Thank
good
you.
God. So, Rishi, Reishi, whatever, mushroom. we're talking about, in particular, Ganoderma lucidum.
That's cool.
Lucidum sounds like a drug.
It does.
AKA the mushroom of immortality. AKA medicine of kings.
Tight.
So, this mushroom loves to grow on deadfall.
It is it fungi.
Loves a log.
Yeah, it does.
And it's one of those mushrooms that, if this makes sense, it looks like half a mushroom was like thrown like when you whip like a rock at somebody, like a frisbee. It looks like you frisbeed a mushroom into a tree and now half of the mushroom is sticking out of the tree. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Kind of like how turkey tails are. So I might be mixing them up with how they look, because I thought, what mushroom is it that looks like fingers?
It also has a fingery appearance, especially in the dried form. But like a live mushroom, reishi mushroom on a tree is like a mix between, it's a saucer finger sticking out of a log. And they are red to dark brown red. They have a shiny top side on them. And I want to say right goddamn now, this is not wabah how to go out into the forest and forage
y'all,
mushrooms.
Please, mushroom foraging, no. While it's a skill that I admire and would love to learn, it can be very dangerous. So don't fuck around with it. But these do look a lot like turkey tails.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. This is a please get your, if you're interested in this, get it from a trusted source, okay? If you are someone who goes into the forest and picks your own mushrooms and eats them, good on you. Please do it safely. But this is in no way I'm not telling you how to identify them. I'm just saying they happen to be red, they're shiny, they're on a tree. You can look them up. They're cool looking. They are among the oldest mushrooms used in a medicinal way. And that's saying something. And it's because of these two things within this mushroom that I'm going to fuck up. Polysaccharides and triterpenes. Triterpenes.
I totally know.
Tri-penis.
What you're saying.
Yeah. I don't know. Doesn't matter. We'll get into it later. We'll get into it later. I mean, it does matter, but I have some contraindications right off of the bat. Listen here, you know the drill. If you are pregnant, breastfeeding, have a blood disorder or low blood pressure.
I have a blood disease.
God damn it. Is that the worst line in that movie?
I think it's quite high up there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Top three at least. Mm.
I have a blood disease. If you have a blood disorder, low blood pressure, or if you are on diabetic medication, or if you are going to be having surgery soon, please talk to your doctor. Don't just use it willy-nilly off the bat. So, some history. Like I said, one of the oldest mushrooms, one of the oldest shrooms used for your health. And that's because before we knew the bigger reasons, before we knew the ways that it was helping inside of our bodies in a way we couldn't see, what we did know is, hey, when people are sick and they have this mushroom, they get better faster. Or when there's a lot of sick people and you have this mushroom, a lot less people get sick, even when they're around these sick people. Another way people used it is, oh, hey, people who have a lot of this mushroom, drink this mushroom, they look real good for like a long time, even as they're aging. They're like, fucking skin stays fucking nice and hydrated, and they just look good, dude. So people were into this mushroom. And let's see here. In traditional Chinese medicine, this is a part of the Fuxing herb collection, which is like the biggest, baddest, most chad herbs for health. Wow. They're like the creme of the creme through the top, tippity bang.
Okay.
Zop zoobles.
Yeah, bro.
Of herbs. And because of this, and it just everywhere that these are found, people just gobble them up. These have been nearly wiped out to like full extinction, like a couple of times through history, because people just can't get enough. So it wasn't really, though, until the 1960s that these mushrooms started being looked at in a more scientific capacity, which blows my dick because it seems like within the realm of medicine, when we're talking things like vaccines and antibiotics, it seems like funguses are looked into first, really quickly. You know what I mean? Funguses are the reason we have a lot of our medicine that we have today. So the way that this waited until the 1960s is a little odd to me, but they have found some cool stuff, and we'll get into that. So beyond the reputation that they already had for being good for your immune system, because people were like, hey, again, I'm not getting sick, even though I'm around these sick people. Oh, this must be good for immune. So it started to like get these, I don't want to say rumors. It started to have a reputation for itself for being good for immune system enhancement before actually having any science to back it up. Mm. But once the science started to look into it, it's like, oh yeah, not only is it good for your immune system, but it's also good for potential anti-cancer effects. It's great for your heart. It is good for your anti-inflammatory actions. And it's wonderful for mental health and some like neurological like diseases and stuff, and all this stuff. So let's jump into it. Let's start with the immune system enhancement. So let's see. Okay, yeah. So the extracts from reishi mushrooms, they exhibited a defense system against oxidative stress and showed a potential, what's the word I'm looking for? Effectiveness, efficacy, I guess, in severe cases of stress and how stress impacts the body and even down to like anxiety disorders and stuff like that. And when you compared it with antioxidant-rich foods, such as, you know, your dark leafy greens and berries, it suggested that reishi extracts may serve as a powerful complement to your dietary choices and that it does indeed boost the immunity. But like, sure, okay, great. It's a great immune booster, like wonderful, cool, but like not really any more so than your dark leafy greens and your other things. So like, what made it so great? Well, I'll tell you. Listen, if you bite into this mushroom, you're going to notice possibly a bitter taste. Now, I will say, when I have made this in my tea and whatnot, I can't really taste it. Like you said, you can't really taste it in your cacao mix and stuff like that. I'm sure if I just chomped on the dried mushroom, I would probably taste it. However, it seems to be pretty easily covered up to me. And that's one thing that I was nervous about because I am not a mushroom enjoyer. I don't really like mushrooms and things, especially raw mushrooms. I can get behind like a sauteed mushroom sometimes, but I just don't like mush. I don't like the taste. So that kind of kept me off of it. I just don't. God. I just don't like it, man. It's like up there with tomatoes for me. Mushrooms and tomatoes are like, and I wish I liked mushrooms because they're so good for you, dude. Yeah.
Well, and a lot of it with mushrooms is that like, there's so many varieties of mushrooms and so many more interesting culinary mushrooms than ones like just like Bella's that you find at the store. Which to me, a lot of the time, like they are great for just absorbing and enhancing the flavor of anything you put them in because they just eventually kind of soak up what they're cooked in and give it a savory addition. But like, if you're talking like you're cooking with like lion's mane or oyster mushrooms, like
a puffball steak. You seen like a puffball steak, dude? That looks great.
I'd try it, you know? And so it's like, I feel like you can get a bit more interesting too. Cause there's some mushrooms out there that are like, morels. They're supposed to be fucking delicious. Yeah. Like, so I think part of it is just trying different mushrooms and, quick little just aside, because I found one recently near me. There's probably a grower near you that grows all kinds of different ones that you could get. Like there's a little group in my area. It's called Rico, R-E-K-O, and it's all the local growers. And there's this couple that brings the mushrooms they grew, and it's like a basket for $8. And it's like, here's a mix of lion's mane and fucking a couple others. Eat them, you know?
And so that's how you do it. If you want to experiment with like enhancing your mushroom tastes culinarily, get it from you. Like, you don't have to go out into the woods and find it. Like, you can find it safely from people who know what they're doing. So let's see here with our general health support. So reishi's ability to enhance antibody secretion is something that was found in studies about the reishi mushroom. So we're getting into like science here. So your cells, and particularly like it helps to fortify white blood cells, but it also helps your cells secrete this, or not your cells, whatever, I don't know science, whatever makes the antibody, it massages, it squirts out more antibodies because of reishi mushrooms' presence. And this is because of those triterpenes that we talked about earlier.
Okay.
They also contribute to that bitter taste. So, and this is typical of anything with a bitter taste. Typically, if something has a bitter taste, it's that triterpene that is making it so. And it offers a broad cardiovascular health benefit. And it's also a recognized, reishi is a recognized adaptogen, which means it helps your body adapt to things, which is pretty cool when it's just like, hey, I'm here to be like your general Band-Aid. I'm here to help you.
I'm just supportive.
You need help with that? All right, fine. It's like the handyman that shows up and just somehow knows how to do everything. All right. Ongoing research into this mushroom reveals there are promising numbers into cancer and tumor reduction. Now, again, this is not Waba telling you that this is going to fix anything like that. It's just in laboratory studies, it is effective in stimulating autophagy, autophagy. I don't know. A natural self-cleaning process in the body, which helps provide an additional layer against various diseases. It's also a wonderful anti-inflammatory that can help to protect the nerves and neurons, and shows potential benefits for memory loss, brain function, improving brain function. Studies do hint at a broader impact on certain diseases like that caused by, like, what's the one I'm thinking of? Oh, you know, there's, like, fibromyalgia.
Oh, yeah.
It is being looked at as a actual, like, treatment for that. And it helping people that have this enormous pain for, like, no real reason.
Yeah,
I mean, there's a reason, but, like.
Yeah, but, like, it's not just like, there.
It's just there. Yeah, it's not like you got stabbed or anything. It's you just fucking hurt all the time.
Yeah, it sucks.
It's also being looked at in neurodegenerative conditions. So we're talking like Alzheimer's and stuff, which is wicked cool. I love seeing things being explored for like dementia and things because that's so sad and so scary. Mm-hmm. But also if we take a step down from like these big brain things, we can also get to like our everyday, and I'm not trying to trivialize mental health issues or disorders or anything like that. I'm just saying there is the larger scale, like Alzheimer's, fucking cancer, stuff like that. And then also looking at potentially offering relief from things like depression and anxiety and there was particular focus on ADHD, I believe, was another one that it helped, like, specifically focused on. But it has mental health support roles, as well as all these roles in, you know, cardiovascular well-being and being good for this, that, and the other. Let's get into more things. Lower blood pressure, which is good for your heart. It's a prebiotic, or it contains prebiotic, I guess, so it's good for gut health. Let's see. Then we get into the, remember it was called, like the, what was it? The everlasting mushroom, the mushroom of immortality.
Immortality.
Immortality. Divinity. Longevity. And, aging. So reishi mushrooms enriched with, polysaccharides, as well as being heavy in antioxidants, can help contribute to, a visibly slowed aging process. I don't know. When we talk about aging, I feel like there's just like a lot of inherently like ageist things thrown in there. You know what I mean?
Well, and sometimes too, and I think what gets lost in the mix when it comes to anti-aging stuff is that it's really about the health of your skin. Like, sure. that's what's most important. And that's something that I've had to learn, is because I've had so long of a battle trying to, you know, like, I was worried, you know, like, my skin is starting to make lines. Well, what's actually happening is my moisture barrier is fucking gone. Like, that's important for the health of my skin. I need to fix it, you know? And so I think that's part of what's really most important, and why looking at benefits that come from reishi and other things like that with the skin is that we forget sometimes that our skin's not just like clothes, like a suit, and that it's our biggest organ. And it's really important to take care of
it. And it's our first line.
Not just to make it look good, you know, but like to keep it healthy. And
that's my issue with the anti-aging talk, is so often it's focused on kind of a looks-based. And that's fine. That's fine. I'm not going to lie to you and say when I look in the mirror and I see my forehead wrinkles that I'm not like, oh, fuck, I wish those weren't there. I'm not going to say
it's
that.
It's missing
not,
the
right?
point, though. It's missing the true point. It's like when you see exercise only being attributed to weight loss instead of talking about mobility benefits and, you know, all of these other things that can just kind of help.
Cardiovascular health.
Yeah, it's like, no. It will make you thin. And it's like, that's not That's not the point.
People like, will love you.
It's a similar vein of missing the true value and missing the point, which you can get secondary benefits. Sure. But like, it's not the point.
And in the same vein of this, with the healthy aging of the skin, we get, let's see, where was I? Okay, yeah, reducing cellular damage, which again goes to the health of not only all of your organs, but your skin, which as Mace, you know, you stole my intelligence here, our largest organ. Polysaccharides,
I believe.
Polysacs are known. They help to support cellular structure, energy storage. They help the cells effectively communicate together and become. It promotes longevity of our cells when they communicate better together. I also saw that when we take reishi, this mushroom, it is incredibly supportive to the mitochondria.
The powerhouse of the cell!
We all know this powerhouse of the cell.
It's the one fact we all learned.
So, research on this mushroom is continual. It is ongoing. Continual is not what I meant. Ongoing is what I meant. It's always happening and always will be. But it's looking good. It's looking good, folks. So I would say use this mushroom for its already known benefits, like helping you sleep and helping you relax, which I don't even, did I even touch on that? Jesus Christ. I put a little bit here at the bottom. Helping you sleep, helping you relax, helping to be an anti-stressor. Also for the immune boosting. Sorry, I stopped talking because I caught myself doing the airplane pilot thing. it helped. Yeah. So use it for all the things we already know it's used for. And then like, hope that all these things that like people are whispering about, hope that those are like found to be true, you know? But let's see. Let's talk. Oh, I wanted to read a couple of things for you here, written by other people, because they were summed up so well. I have here, and I will link to these, I have peakandvalley.co. So here's some different scientific studies that show how this mushroom increases our feelings of well-being. Okay, so spore powder of this mushroom improves cancer-related fatigue in breast cancer patients. The effect, and then it links to the study. So, you know, if you want to read more into this, go here. The effect of an extract of this mushroom in men with lower urinary. I don't know why it's men, but it says specifically men. I don't know. Maybe that's what the study. Anyway, in men with lower urinary tract symptoms, a double-blind, placebo-controlled, randomized, and dose-ranging study concluded that the study gave an extract of mushrooms to a group of men that had lower tract issues.
I wonder if it's like
after
prostate.
The trial times. What?
I wonder if it's related to the prostate, how that can like put pressure and cause incontinence and whatnot, which might be why it's men specifically.
The research noticed that a 6 mg, that milligram dosage of this mushroom was associated with improvements in their lower urinary tract problems. And also a randomized double-blind placebo-controlled study of this mushroom concluded, some of these words I don't really know. I'm so sorry. I'm not a science bitch. This study took 136 people that had a condition called neuroasthenia. A condition where people suffer from headaches, fatigue, irritability, as well as some other symptoms. People who took about 5 g of this mushroom for 8 weeks noticed an increase of their general well-being, a reduction in fatigue, versus people who did not take the mushroom at all. So there's several studies here that's like, yeah, there's good shit here. Now, one more that I have here is consciouslifestyle.mag. Actually, let me reopen what I just had because I want to link y'all to it. Okay. ConsciousLifestyleMag.com says, after reading some of the more poetic and enthusiastic descriptions of this rare mushroom that has been accumulated over the centuries, one might get the impression that it is a proverbial fountain of youth. But looking past the hyperbole, there is impressive and growing body of scientific research validating and sustaining many of these legendary claims. Despite its lack of mainstream awareness in the United States and other Western countries, reishi is the most well-studied herbal medicine on the planet. In fact, so much research has been done verifying the borderline miraculous medicinal properties of this mushroom that many Asian, particularly Chinese and Japanese, doctors use it alongside or in place of established pharmaceutical medicines as a first line of treatment in their clinical procedure battling notoriously different autoimmune diseases such as cancer, AIDS, hepatitis, among others. These days, it is the most well-known in medicinal circles for its powerful anti-tumor, anti-cancer, antibacterial, antiviral, and general immune-stimulating properties. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. This is a really good article if you want some more like scientific studies and whatnot. So, let's talk magic.
Magic.
First up, we've got spiritual healing. So because of the healing nature of this mushroom, reishi is associated with spiritual healing and balance, particularly good in rituals or spells for overall well-being and harmony, longevity and vitality. Because of its associations. Again, if you incorporate these into spells focused on your longevity and vitality, if you're trying to like make that potion, that immunity potion, there you go. Use this. Protection. Used to ward off negative entities. Also included some people don't make protective charms without adding this mushroom to it, which I thought was cute. Dream enhancement. Thought to enhance your lucid dreaming abilities. And perhaps that was what I was looking for earlier when I was talking about the dream. When like most of your sleep is dreamless, but when you do dream, it feels highly lucid. Although without me like realizing it, if that makes sense. I don't know if that's going to make sense. Have you ever had a dream where you felt like when you woke up, you were like, I think that I could have done whatever I wanted in that dream. I just kind of rolled with it.
I don't know if that'll make sense. Yeah. Okay. I know exactly what you mean. Even though I'm not particularly a lucid dreamer, just because I'm a scattered, disorganized dreamer, I have had some to where I'm like, I feel like I was a bit more there, you know?
Yeah. It feels, even if it just feels a little more real, a little more substantial, that's what it felt like to me. This is, you can use this in dream work or in dream rituals to connect to your spiritual team during sleep if you're trying to blast off to that realm.
Calming properties. That's fucking dream work!
Oh no, that made me think of DreamWorks Studios, and now it's making me think of El Dorado.
A glorious city!
Built by the divinity, by God.
Ugh, so good.
Oh my God. Suitable for meditation practices there.
I derailed you. I'm so sorry. I had to get it out.
This mushroom is good in connecting us to the spirit realm. And also thrown in here, I kind of just gathered this and I didn't really have a place for it, but apparently this it's connected to the astrological sign Gemini. I don't know, somebody out there, if that makes sense to you, tell me, because I otherwise would have put this as like, I don't know, I see mushrooms as just all being Tauruses.
Just because they're earthy fungi.
And listen, if there's anything about a Taurus, it's an earthy, fun guy.
Hey, I totally get it. Yeah. Okay, just don't get their fucking books disorganized or their fucking any shit like that or move around their beautiful decorations or anything. Or don't wash their comfy cashmere blanket.
They'll let you know. They'll let you know how they feel
about it. Oh, yeah. But I get it, though. I really admire the Taurus way of life.
I admire the ability to tell someone in a very flat and like in just like a it is what it is kind of way when they've wronged you. Because like so many times, like, you know, when somebody does something that like kind of gets under your skin and you're like, it's okay. I don't need to make this a thing. A Taurus will just be like, hey, man, I didn't fucking like when you did that. Yeah, and they're not mad at you.
Yeah, I didn't like this. I didn't like this. Yeah.
They'll just tell you.
Yeah. Yeah. Not in an asshole way, just in a way.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that is me, and that's Reishi Mushroom. Sorry it fell apart at the end there. I started thinking about the ruins of El Dorado.
It's okay. It's, dude, there's no bigger brain worm than the road to El Dorado.
1,000 years ago.
Oh, so fucking good. For those who care and you love that movie, we're doing that on Simp Cap right now. It's our Wimp Cap. Yes. Part two is coming tomorrow on Thursday, where we're going to finish the second half of the movie when shit goes wild and Seko Khan really lets everybody have it.
He really, he unleashes.
Seko Khan!
Did you say something just now? Because if so, the mic cut out.
It did. It cut me out for sure. I did the classic, you know, when he's really laying waste to the place, when the choir is going, Seko Khan, all in the background. But I did it with full gusto, and I think our software flattened my peak immediately.
I just heard like a bzzzt noise.
Yes. Yeah. Alrighty, let me get my notes up. I should have had them up already, but I didn't do it. All right. Talking about weather vanes today. For some reason. It's what my brain wanted. Oh. We're here together to experience it. And again, like I mentioned, you know, my first experience with a weather vane, especially here. So now if you live in Europe, you might see more weather vanes just that have survived from time. And because y'all have so many more old buildings than we do. So you might see them a bit more often.
Surviving old buildings.
Yes. Yeah. 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 And just like y'all have buildings older than this whole country, you know, over there, which is wild, but super cool. And so, again, my first was about 5 years old, seeing it at the top of my school, which proudly boasted was built by German POWs. And I think about that sometimes. Yeah. It was apparently why the auditorium was haunted, because just too many German POWs died building it. but it was faux show haunted. It was the creepiest building in the world, dude. But
do you think we could get into it?
No, not with our name, not with our business. But if we lied,
But we'll say we're with the church or something.
But I spent a lot of time in that auditorium in plays and choir shows. But let me tell you, I did crew for a show once. I ran lights, and that was up in the light booth, way, way up at like the top in the back of the building. And it was eerie. Like it was. Were you with us when we went to the top floor of the Galvez?
I was, I don't think so.
That's the way that, it's the only way that I can describe it. But it was that horrible, you're being watched 24/7 feeling. And there was also a hole cut in the ceiling for no reason. That was just blackness. And nobody was around you for like 100 yards. And you're just up there alone in this little, it was awful. And sometimes there was the sound kid too, but like, I hated it. Anyway, none of this matters. None of this is pertinent to this topic.
I'm the sound kid.
Yeah. And so anyway, all of that is to say, windmills caught my attention early. And they're much better than, you know, those fucking wind socks. I don't give a shit about a wind sock. I want to see a metal contraption atop a building that moves with the wind, with an item on the top that's cool and ornate.
Looking ass.
Yes. And I like the ornateness of it. And what I found interesting to look at, and this is something that I talk about a lot, we talk about a lot, and I just think it's important to remember, and it's fun to look into, is just how things used to be more important than they are today to the daily person. Mm. And wind was crucial to the ancient world in a whole myriad of ways, some of which you might not think about.
Well, and, dude, just from watching Alone, again, sorry if you hate Alone, but just from watching Alone, sorry, I get stuck sometimes. Like, you can't make a fire, or it comes through their little shelter.
That's the thing. You got to situate your shelter in according to the wind, or accordance to the wind.
Or hunting. Things will catch your fucking scent.
They'll sniff you.
They'll smell your coochie. That's what they're smelling, right? When we say they catch our scent.
I think they're smelling you, but I assume your bits are involved in it. But I think they specifically are not like only sniffing out coochie smell. I think they're getting a whole amalgam. But
they're sniffing that buss.
There you go. That's the one that everybody's got a buss. That's the most universal one. They are. That's what they're sniffing is the buss. And we can forget, you know, like, it's like, here's an example. Like right now, you know, wind energy is picking up steam. Like, wind created energy to power our electrical devices and use as a power source. But we forget that this isn't new at all. It's just coming back again, because wind used to be a part of the daily life and foundation of many jobs and functions and power all over the world. And on that note, we're going to go all over the place today looking at these devices, looking at weather vanes, and we're putting a big pin in a map of the world, starting out initially in Athens, Greece.
And whoa, I thought you were going to say Athens, Texas.
No. Nope. And in Athens, Greece, we have the home. It is the home of the Tower of Winds, which is so sweet. It still stands today, which is cool. So
sick.
It seems that if you look into the history of the weather vane, what you cannot, you got to talk about this structure and the very famous weather vane that was atop it. Because, according to many sources, this is the first creation and usage of a structural weather vane made out of, like, metal that we see today. It was, like, the beginning of the concept. And, you know, not to say that they weren't, like, tracking the wind and they didn't have maybe, like, scarves and shit check in, but, like, this was a weather vane, you know, created. And
what year are we looking at?
48 BC.
Jeez!
Yeah. And so
I remember that year.
Yeah, it was a good year. And Andronicus, Greek astronomer Andronicus, designed the Tower of Winds, which again was constructed in 48 BC, to determine not just the direction of the wind, but as well as the time in two different ways. But we'll get into that.
The time?
The time. Dude, it's cool. The bear? It's really fascinating, and I don't even really understand it all the way. But it seems that this first weather vane, also called wind vane, was fashioned to look like the Greek demigod Triton. And super fucking sweet, dude. And it had the head and torso of a man and the tail of a fish, as Triton is described. And in one hand, it held like a rod or a staff that pointed in the direction of the wind, swiveling up atop. Now, we're going to kind of just, it's not just that, though. The wind here had layers of detail. But Triton, according to the mythology, was the son of Poseidon. And he, again, ruled more as a demigod, the spirit of the sea. He was a merman with a sweet ash fish tail and a conch shell. So you can kind of think King Triton and the Little Mermaid. You know, it's like he's the half.
Yeah.
He's, you know, he's got.
Does he have human bits?
That's something that I always wonder about mermaids. Not really specified. Huh. Does it like pop out of a pocket, you know, or?
Ew.
I don't know, bro. And so apparently this weather vane was roughly 4 to 8 feet long. It was big, and which is serious considering it was probably heavier than all fucking hell. Like, these are made out of, I don't know if this was made by cast iron or what, but it was metal. And unfortunately, this weather vane is lost to history, which is a real bummer.
Aww.
But there's enough description of it that we not only know it was real, we get a good idea of what it looked like. So, while not really on topic today, I want to talk about the Tower of Winds, because this is a fascinating structure. So, the tower, again, still standing today, is octagonal in shape. So, it's like this octagonal pillar-shaped building. And it features 8 smooth marble sides. And it's constructed of the same marble that the Parthenon was made from. However, this building was constructed with science in mind, as the Tower of Winds is quite possibly the world's first, like, in this way, obvious meteorological, that's such a hard word for me, meteorological center to track the weather. And the 8 sides of the building represented the 8 different wind gods, as well as each direction that they corresponded with on the compass. So at the top of each of these 8 sides was a relief carving featuring each of these entities, who are Boreas, who represented north, Caecias, who was northeast, Eurus, east, Apeliotis, southeast, Notus, south, Leaps, southwest, Zephyrus, west, and Skyron, northwest. So the 8 direct...
Skyron!
Yeah, yeah. Skiron, who I believe was responsible for the winter winds. But I have that broken down because I have descriptions of what each of these reliefs kind of depict up the top, even though some of them are pretty weather-worn at this point. But Boreas is the god of the north wind, and he's depicted with shaggy hair and a beard, with a billowing cloak and a conch shell in his hands.
Hot.
So Caecias was the god of the northeast wind, and he's portrayed as a bearded man with a shield full of hailstones.
Hot.
Apeliotis, I did not get to look these guys' pronunciation up. I totally forgot. The god of the east wind appears as a clean-shaven man holding a cloak full of fruit and grain.
Hot.
Eurus, the god of the southeast wind, who is sculpted as a bearded man holding a heavy cloak. Notos, the god of the south wind, pours water from a vase. Lips, it's spelled like lips, L-I-P-S. The god of the southwest wind is represented holding the stern of a ship. Zephyros.
Not going to be hot.
No, they all sound pretty cool.
My joke.
No, they all sound pretty sweet.
My joke was going to be one of them. Oh, damn it.
Yeah.
All right.
Zephyros, the god of the west wind, is depicted as a beardless youth scattering flowers from his mantle. So.
Okay, not hot.
Not hot, because that one might be a boy.
Yes.
Skyron, the god of the northwest, is a bearded man tilting a cauldron, signifying the onset of winter. So
he's my favorite.
That's pretty sweet, right? It's pretty cool. Yeah. So, like with many natural phenomena in the ancient world, it was attributed to having a divine source. So each side of the tower correlated with each of these wind gods, as well as the direction of the compass associated with them, which is pretty cool. But that's not all. So along with this, the tower was also a timekeeping structure, as it featured a sundial created from the sides, which you can still see the notches today in the structure, as well as what is called a clepsydra, which is a water clock. So they needed to be able to tell the time on days it was overcast or at nighttime when you don't have the sun casting a shadow. So through like a complicated internal structure and well funneling system, I don't really understand the mechanics of it. They were able to tell the time from this water function, which is pretty wild.
Somebody like ELI 5 on that.
It's pretty interesting. Clepsydra, or C-L-E-P-S-Y-D-R-A. And to top it all, this whole interesting new science building was a special newly designed wind direction telling device designed by Adronicus, essentially showing Triton telling us which wind god was in charge that day. Which is pretty cool. You know, so if the wind's blowing southeast, his little rod will be pointing southeast, which is Eurus, you know, saying Eurus is in charge today. So, you know that and whatever that'll mean with the wind, which is pretty cool. And you would want to know this information because the winds did more than carry ships. They determined the health and comfort of cities. This is like you were mentioning earlier with the design and placement of shelters with wind in mind. And there's a great excerpt from a Roman architect who wrote one of the only good surviving architectural texts, it seems, from this time, named Vitruvius, who wrote about the Tower of Winds. And this was in the first century BCE. So he talks about city planning in regards to thinking about the winds. So he begins with kind of an expression of concern over the orientation of streets within towns and cities, who's like, you know, who are being built and laid out. And he says, cold winds are disagreeable, hot winds, enervating, moist winds, unhealthy. He gives the example of a town called Mytilene on the island of Lesbos, which he describes as having been built. It was great, beautiful. Listen, gorgeous city. Great
What's
place.
The island's name?
L-E-S-B-O-S. It looks like Lesbos.
That's where we get it from. Woo-woo.
Yeah, so so we on this place. Anyway, so we talked about this really fantastic city. Good taste. You want to go, you know, but you know what the fucking problem is? He says, when the wind is south, the people fall ill. When it is northwest, it sets them coughing. With a north wind, they do indeed recover, but cannot stand about in the alleys and streets, owing to the severe cold. So they laid out this city poorly, and it basically makes wind tunnels in all the wrong directions. And didn't
get sick all the time.
Yeah, it wasn't built in a way to divert and work with the wind and kind of keep it in mind in that way. So basically, you got to be aware of the directions of the wind gusts at various times of the year, not just like all seasons have wind shifts. So you can't just plan your city for how it goes in summertime. You got to plan all year long, which is really fascinating when you think like, of course, yeah, there was like that had to have been done. But this is how long ago it was.
Even smarter to plan for when it's going to be not summertime. It's like, you know, summertime, the living's easy.
Yeah, but we got to remember this was before climate control. So you needed breezes. You needed breezes in your house.
Okay.
Like, there was no temperature aid in structures. Sorry. You just had to suffer.
I refuse to think of a time before AC. Yeah. It doesn't exist to me.
So, and it's not even just that. Like, talking about the wind tunnels all throughout, especially in the cold seasons with volatile cold winds, there were no closed carts back in this time. You couldn't get in your car and turn on your seat warmers. If you weren't walking somewhere or on an animal, you were riding on a cart. That's it. So if you're going down a street that's essentially a freezing wind tunnel, that fucking blows. So these things had to be considered. And the use of weather vanes continued following this debut in Athens, Greece, on the Tower of Winds, and really exploded by the 9th century in the Common Era because of a papal edict. Rome decreed that every church should have a cockerel on its dome steeple.
Sorry.
And this is because it's a reminder of Jesus's prophecy that the rooster would not crow before Peter had denied him three times. So Luke 22:34. Now, while not originally intended as weather vanes, it kind of became that way because that's like the common place in town, a gathering place. You're going to see it everywhere in town. So everybody would be able to see which way the wind is blowing. And it started the term weathercock, which is still used today. Yeah. Weathercock. And so these weathercocks, this is why you still to this day see the rooster on the weather vane all the time. It comes from this edict, which originally just started with putting the roosters up there and then making the roosters weather vanes. And now you just see it. They have a very synonymous pairing with each other of roosters and weather vane, weathercocks. And I love that term.
Weathercocks.
Weathercock. I love it. That's also a Rock Snake song.
Weathercock. What was the one? Oh, no, I didn't actually write it down from the other day.
I don't remember. I remember you saying you were going to write it down, but it's gone.
Shit.
It's lost. This, here we are.
No,
weather vanes.
No, it's not. Because people listen to these. It's it. Okay, listen. If you listen to Simp Cap, we recently had a one. So somebody write us. Okay, there we go. It is done.
People listen to these. Thank God. So, weather vanes were also highly crucial in battle, as they would let archers know which direction the wind was traveling so they could adjust their shots, knowing, if the wind is going this direction, I might need to kind of adjust the angle, the point of my arrow to account for the arc that it's going to receive due to the wind affecting it, things like that. And sometimes they were in the form of pennants, which is one of the usages for pennants on in battle, but also sometimes actual metal weather vanes that could withstand a bit more and were carried along to help the archers, as well as sound, again, being downwind, upwind in battle, things like that mattered, and all sorts of shit like that. So wind mattered in that regard. So also in the 9th century, weather vanes were really getting embraced in Scandinavia. And their style of weather vane that was utilized and embraced heavily by Viking seafarers was called a quadrant style.
Ooh.
So these weren't just functional. They are beautiful. They're gilded a lot of the time. They were kind of adopted as a status symbol, and they're super gorgeous, and they're kind of like a right angle, hence the name of a quadrant. So they're like a quadrant of a square is what they look like. And they decorated the tall mast with these super gilded, really pretty quadrant shaped weather vanes, which, unlike those used on land, these had a specific purpose. They didn't give the wind's true direction. They simply indicated like a combination of the vessel and the wind's directions together. And this combination is what aided the Viking navigators to be able to confidently know their true direction and do some of the incredible far-reaching ventures that they did. It was an additional navigational tool that they could utilize. And the wind was the basis for whole economies. It powered the ships that brought in supplies and people from different places, supplies sold by merchants, people being workers to come in and just spread the globalization that we have seen on this planet in, you know, the centuries past. It would also, you know, it would bring in tradesmen and, you know, tradespeople, people who could do work. Not only that, which boosted the, like in just regards to people, it powered windmills that helped to draw water away from crops as well as grind up grains. There was actually, dude, this is blowing my mind. I have the title of the video here. If I forget to link it, it's How a Wind Powered Sawmill Works - Amazing. It's on YouTube. Listen, fascinating. Okay. Shit. Fascinating
shit. That collection
shit
of words though, makes me think of sawmill gravy.
So it makes me think. So when I was in high school, I found this shirt at a Goodwill that the front said the asparagus bunch and the back just said amazing. And it's lost to time, but God damn it, I wish I still had that shirt. I had no clarification.
The ironic t-shirts of the early odds.
It was wonderful, dude. I loved it. So these wind-powered sawmill is awesome, for one. But they were a Dutch design from the 13th century, and these worked to process lumber, the main building material for the time, which there's still one functional in the Netherlands, which I am someone who's had a lifelong obsession with windmills. I have a giant one tattooed on my back. And
that's right, you do.
This is a windmill sawmill. And watch this video. It's still functional. It shows how it works. It's so cool. And it cuts these clean ass planks because it's like these multiple vertical blades that work as planers and or like plank creating. I don't remember if those are called planers. I feel like they are, but it creates the like nice uniform planks all while like being a myriad of gears and like cranks and pulleys, all made out of wood and metal pieces powered by the turn of the windmill blades. And so it'll cut faster when the wind is blowing harder and it'll slow down. But like in the video, you just hear the rhythmic sounds of this whole machine functioning with zero carbon footprint, just using the power of the wind. And it is the coolest thing. And is it the most efficient? No. But it requires no power aside from the wind, which is amazing to me. And so that's what I meant by like wind power is not a new thing. Like we got away from it with the, you know, using like more combustion type stuff and utilizing coal and fossil fuels and things like that. But the wind was there for us from the start. And that's all to say, you know, just some examples there of knowing the direction of the wind as well as what the wind's going to be doing. And taking data to predict future winds, super fucking useful, helpful. And that takes us to, so we're going to fast forward through history a good bit to talk about someone at Coppersmith Shim Drown. So also they had the title of Deacon, Coppersmith Deacon Shim Drown.
Whoa, and, that's sick.
Yeah. And so they lived from December 4th, 1683 to January 13th, 1774. And they are known as America's first documented weather vane creator. And some of his creations you can still see today. I'm going to talk about two of them specifically. And one of them is very well known, and it is a gorgeous 4 foot long, 80 pound glass-eyed copper grasshopper atop Faneuil Hall in Boston, Massachusetts, where it was placed in 1742. So
I was not expecting Boston, Massachusetts. I don't know why.
Yeah. So he's we're in North America now. He's America's first documented weather vane creator. That's his title. Fun little side story here that I thought was interesting. So the grasshopper actually fell from its place in 1755 when the Cape Ann earthquake struck Boston. And Shim and his son Thomas repaired the giant copper insect and placed it back atop Faneuil Hall. But in a stroke of humor, Shim's son Thomas placed a note in the belly of the grasshopper. It's called Food for the Grasshopper. Ooh. And it reads this: Shim Drown made it, May 25, 1742. To my brethren and fellow grasshoppers, fell in ye year 1755, November 13th, early in ye morning by a great earthquake by my old master above. Again, like to have met with utter ruin by fire, by hopping timely from my public station, came of the broken bones and much bruised. Cured and fixed, old master's son Thomas Drown, June 28th, 1768, and though I will promise to discharge my office, yet I shall vary as ye wind. So apparently he's saying, listen, this earthquake was real bad, and instead of burning and melting like the whole building did, like the fucking knob this whole building was, I jumped. I grasshoppered my way off this building, and I got a little bit beat up, but I survived. And I just think that's a really cute, whimsical thing to do. Like, there's no purpose of this. It's just a neat, cute little thing.
The starting of it, what was the very first line? Something, his name made it?
I love that. Shim Drown made it, May 25th, 1742.
That sounds like a producer tag that would be dropped in like a rap, like a hip hop song.
And what I love is that I love the to my brethren and fellow grasshoppers. How cute is that? Aww. I'm just a big fan. So apparently in 1974, the weather vane was stolen for a time. It vanished. And a pretty wild tale that made national news of attempted ransom. And from what I could tell, it was hidden right under people's noses. So the person that stole this had previously worked on the building, I believe, in the 60s, and just hid it in the, the cupola? Whatever it is, like the little boxy thing that sits atop the building the weather vane sits on, you know, like the little crow's nest looking thing. It was just hidden inside of that, from as I understand it. So it was kind of hiding in plain sight, but the goal was to try to ran some value out of this very beloved cricket. And interestingly, apparently this helped to, I don't know if it just opened up demand or care of missing ones, but because of this instance and awareness being brought to stolen weather vanes, a few other historical weather vanes were recovered in different places as well, which is odd, but neat. So either way, while it was damaged in the theft process, it was repaired again and placed back atop the building where it still is today. You can still see this big giant grasshopper with glass eyes above this Faneuil Hall. However, that was not his first documented gig, Shim Drown. It was in 1716 when he created America's first authenticated weather vane, which was a gilded Native American archer. And it was placed on the Providence House in Boston, which at the time in 1716, or later on in 1716, a few years later, became the official residence of the royal governor. So this is no longer standing on that building. It is displayed in the Massachusetts Historical Society. So that's just a couple of vanes made by the first documented American weather vane creator, Coppersmith Shim Drown. And what I love about weather vanes, and if I'm drawing all of this, my thoughts to a close, is that I love the juxtaposition of practicality and flair that they provide. And I think there's something beautiful about that. You know, like they bid us to ask, why can't the functional be beautiful? And it used to be. This is back from a time.
That's your Aquarius sun and Leo rising.
I love it. Right, you know, like if you got to do, if you got to have a tool and if you got to be able to, why not make it fun, make it pretty, make it ornate and put some creativity in there. You know, it doesn't just have to be an instrument. And I think that's so neat. And they also just have us remember a time not so long ago when the wind was something so much more to the people affected by it. Like to us now, assuming it's not like a goddamn tornado or hurricane, the wind is at most going to be an inconvenience. You know, like, unless it like blows and drops a limb on your car or something like that. But like the day to day.
And even then.
It's your, it's not going to ruin your whole life or, you know, break down the economy most likely. Like it could. But like, I don't know. I just find that really neat and interesting to remember about. And before modern supply chains that featured, you know, a fuel-based system, before climate-controlled spaces that helped with internal temperature, you know, keeping us warm if there's cold drafts or keeping us cool and if it's hot, before farmers had weather apps or forecasts to tell them what to look for, and more importantly, before the world moved away from wind as the driving source of, you know, life as humans knew it, it was what it was. These veins were important. And I love that they were made beautiful, too. And it's not just a tool. They're art. And you can still, nowadays, they're generally used for more ornate purposes. You can find them, put atop houses. And no, they're not really necessary because you can pull your phone out and pull up your app and be like, not only what direction is the wind, how many miles an hour is it today? But yeah, I just think they're beautiful. I think they are so gorgeous. And I always have. So anyway, that's weather vanes. I know that this wasn't really witchy focus, but I do feel like if you are building a witch aesthetic and you want to make your house have the look, man, throw a weather vane up atop it.
I mean, why not?
Yeah. As someone who, as someone with Vata predominance, which is wind and ether in regards to the five element, getting into the doshic makeup in Ayurveda, the wind is very aggravating to me because it's like got a lot of wind in me. And when you pour more wind on it, I immediately prune up and shrivel and blow away. It
makes me angry.
I'm so dry. It like it makes me so dry. So no, the wind
is tough. It's not a drying thing for me. It's just an anything that is ongoing like that. I can handle almost anything in short bursts. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But if something is grating, like a low-grade headache that you have all day, or like a noise that keeps going all day long and won't stop, or the wind, and you know what I mean? Anything that drags itself on like that is a big time ass chap for me.
Yeah. I get it. Mine is, I also have dry eye. And so you saw it. You saw it affect me when we were walking around the stockyards. Like,
I've seen it from you since you were a babe.
Yeah. Anytime the wind blows, my eyes immediately just start pouring water. It sucks. It didn't even have to be cold wind. Any wind. So, it's good to know. If y'all have got some sweet ass weather vanes in your town or if you've got one on your house, put it in the coven. I want to see it. I want to admire your weather vanes. And if you've got a weather
cock,
show it to me.
Yeah.
Let me see it.
Show me that wind cock.
Hell yeah, bro.
We start getting dick pics in our email.
I don't want your boring ass non-weathercock. I want a weathercock. It's not going to, your sad little flesh cock isn't going to stand up to that.
Sad. Is it a weathercock if they dip it in snow first?
It's got to be, if you want to go through the trouble and impress me and send me an unsolicited dick pic for a weathercock, you better pour fucking hot bronze all over it because otherwise I'm not impressed.
Whoa.
I need to see a metal weathercock or I'm seeing nothing at all.
Wow. Damn, that would be so painful.
I hate unsolicited dick pics. They make me fucking livid.
They make me, if anything, like when I think about it and I think about the reason that it makes me react this way, then yes, I get mad. They make me laugh.
It's the part of me that it's like, you know, we've talked about my love of a job well done And that is just such a fucking lazy, just lazy. Absolute degen effort.
I've never seen an artful, unsolicited
degen. No, it's always in bad lighting, just kind of like with the hand awkwardly holding it with like flash on. Why is the flash on? Why are they always
the flash?
What's going on?
Always your dirty room in the bathroom.
Oh, God.
And probably bachelor navy blue bed sheets.
Like, actually, whoa. Fuck yeah. Off. What? Yeah. So no.
Like crumbs of food in your pubes.
Oh, my God. Gross.
And here's the thing. Have you ever received an unsolicited D-pic where somebody actually maintained their pubes?
I don't feel
or
like
it's just like a wild brush.
I don't feel like I ever look at them enough to know that.
Oh, I thoroughly inspect them and I find everything wrong with it.
Yeah. I've not gotten one in a long time, so I'm glad for it. But I'm rusty on the traits.
They're the same as they ever were.
Of course they are, because they're a lazy fucking no good effort, and I'll never respect it. Ever.
Now, listen here. If you ask.
Oh, I don't care.
And I accept.
Yeah.
And you send, and it's a beautiful, you know, like an interesting angle or something.
Yeah.
Come on. That's great.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a whole different story. If somebody's like, let me see your dick. And then if you want to send a picture, if I can go for it. But if you're just going to roll, if you're going to steamroll into my goddamn messages with just an unsolicited, lazy ass leaning pic of your dick, I'm not into it.
Yeah, yeah. You know, there's a TV on in the background with Family Guy. I just don't want to see it.
Work around it. You know, and ask, and then if you get a yes, create some art. You know, it's an opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah. Do some research. Find ones that make you go, oh, that's neat, and do that.
Yeah. 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 And nothing against leaners. But if you got a leaner,
no,
accent it. You know? Don't waste it just in a lazy lion on your back flash picture so I can see your goddamn Brooke Burke poster on your wall. I'm not interested.
I don't want to see your unkempt toenails. No, thanks.
God damn it. Gross. We've got to stop this. We've got to leave. We're just roasting people now.
I think. But you know, it's going to speak to several people.
Almost. Who hadn't gotten one? That's the thing. For real. Who hadn't gotten one? We all feel the pain.
Okay. Wow.
I'm sweating.
Oof. Okay. We're gonna leave now on that note.
Yeah.
And wubba, keep your dick pics consensual.
Consensual. Yeah. And creative.
Yeah. We need a shirt. We need a shirt. Wubba. Creative and consensual dick pics.
Yeah. Or bust.
Mm. We'll figure it out. Or bust it. Bye.
Goodbye, everyone.
Oh, my God.
There's been some studies, and so...